my boy said, hey, we're going to come pick you up, take you to the disco tonight, get your mind off your troubles. I said, all right, cool, pick me up. So they came to the house, and my friend Cliff brought this guy with him I never saw before, and my brother was there with this other guy. So I said, yeah, come on in, let's have a drink at the bar. So downstairs in my basement and bar was a shrine to graffiti. I had all these whole cars and shit, blow-ups, all kinds of shit, hanging up canvases. So we started doing drinks at the bar, and the one guy sitting there with his drink like this. And I said to him, what's up? You know, like, you look disturbed. He's like, I'm in the Vandal Squad. I said, you're in the what? He said, I'm in the Vandal Squad. He goes, they got fucking files on you guys. Well, is the Wiz Saw? I go, I'm fucking Saw. He goes, you're Saw? Got files on you like this, man. I'm like, yeah, you were never here, right? And I looked at the guys, and I'm like, you were never here, right? Killer Keller podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
Street Culture TV.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, central London, or central as you need to be. Night by now, you've been checking in, tuning in and clocking out for enough time. So yeah, big up yourselves and everybody else that's following, sharing and caring. You know what time it is. House sponsors the mighty GK Nifty Heads of a massive 100,000 play to earn NFTs to give away to the streets. Just hit the link in the description or go to gknifty.com and get ready for HODL Wars Summer 2024. We're going transit. Atlantic, no less. Yo, I love these ones. And yes, we're talking to a Don, TMB president, no doubt. From NYC to Arizona is the Wiz's compadre and more. Sar, TMB inside. Oh, and Vopstars, TMB inside the place. Sar, what's good?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Yeah, it's a trip to still be involved in this game and then see that what it elevated to. You know, like, we started this as kids and, you know, no internet, no magazines, no books to go by. You just benching, sitting on the trains. We invented the word benching, sitting on a wooden bench on the subway system, watching the trains go by, going into the layups, studying other people's graffiti and like photographing whatever we could, if we could steal our mother's camera. You know, I thought I was 12 years old. So like whatever I had to appropriate. And that's what, like, today kids can go to a store and buy a bouquet of colors. Like, you had 2,000 graffiti writers trying to steal the same can of Jungle Green Krylon from the hardware store. So if you had a can of Jungle Green, you weren't going to use the whole can on one piece. You were going to use it sparingly because, hey, you know, I want to have some dope colors for my pieces. So, you know, if I appropriated, I went racking and I came up with two reds, a brown and a black, I'd say, okay, the two reds will be my frill in, the brown will be my 3D, and the black will be my outline. You use what you stole. You use what you racked up. You didn't have this luxury of going on the internet. Okay, I'm going to have fat purples. I'm going to have greens. I'm going to have blues. And I'm going to order my fat caps online. What online? There was no such thing, bro. We used to go to the supermarket, open up the cans, and take the Niagara straight starches and walk out with a mouthful of fat caps. What? And that was our cans. That's the way we used to do it. You know what I'm saying? So I just think, you know, the younger writers, they got to respect where it came from. Like, without us, there's no them. So they have to understand, like, we made this a vocation, and we didn't have rules at the beginning. We made the rules. We didn't have, an avenue to get our stuff other than racking. And stuff. Uh-huh. Like, you know, if you're a kid, you don't have no income. You know, you want to get up, you got to rack. If you don't know how to learn a rack, you're not getting up. So, like, we would go on rack missions. Dude, we'd come home. You know, as soon as one of us had a car, we'd go on these tours and come home with 100, 150 cans in a day, bro. And then what we used to do, our rule was within TMB and RTW, like, we fill up the trunk, we got back, and we just divided up evenly. So there was no hard feelings, because I may come across three aqua turquoises and you got nothing but, you know, silvers. All right, that's all right. One of them is for you, one is for Miz, one's for Satch. Like, me and Satch used to go on mad rack missions. Me and Fuzz won mad rack missions, and Ghost. Me, Fuzz, and Ghost would take a Lincoln. I was probably like 20 at the time. And we'd drive for hours, man, and stop. Wow. Every hardware store along the strip, stop, run in, rack up, come on. And, you know, all those dudes were really good rackers. Fuzz was a great racker, Ghost. is the Wiz, Sash. You know, nobody blips right now. No such thing.
It's a given to most people nowadays that even graffiti exists as a art style. Like back then, not only were you doing something ad hoc and like the materials were never there, but also you're creating letter form and styles that, to be quite honest, which, you know, Tim B personified that and amplified that.
You kind of judged if you bit someone's style back in the day. You had to come up with some shit original and you had to have a name that you owned. Like, you know, you're not going to start off, a writer's not going to start off today, but there are a few that'll take someone's name. Like, you know, not to throw anybody under the bus, but some guy's writing Crash on the freight trains in the United States. Someone's writing Part, or he's putting Part Two at least. Like, Part from the Death Squad is legendary. You know,
legendary.
You know, it's like, why would you write, would you start writing graffiti today and write Comet or Blade or Scene or Is the Wiz? No, you wouldn't. So, like, you know, if you want respect from your peers, you got to be original and you got to have, you know, you have to have a name that you own. That's very important.
Well, you come from an incredible legacy. I mean, to start off with We Owe and Cisco from the 70s, original TMB, then fast forward to Is the Wiz, Satch, Too Ill, Key, Savs, which you mentioned, Pulse, Attek from Germany. I mean, yourself. These are like pivotal people within
I remember when Pulse, he was a kid when I met him. He first came to the United States. I mean, Iz is gone 15 years. So you got to remember, I met Pulse probably 20 years ago. I met Ruff and Stylo and Solo and Nique. I met those dudes 35 years ago. So come on, man, I'm 60 years old. So and I'm still painting. So everyone that's a part of this becomes a fan. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So if I see someone from the old days do a piece, a new kid may look at that and say, oh God, that's horrible. Bro, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. But he's a legend, man. That dude's 65 years old. He just did a piece. Quick just did a whole car in the E's and F's not too long ago.
What? Crazy.
He's 66, about 66 years old. So
I see Duster out there a lot as well. I see Duster's busy. Yeah.
Duster, I've never met. I knew the original Duster, Larry Lawson. Duster, he's passed away a long time ago. He wrote with Vinny. He started in 1973,
4. Wow.
That was the original Duster. But I came up in a weird era. There's that whole group that you see in Style Wars that came out in 80, 82. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole group that came out in the early 70s. I came out in 77. So I was watching the changing of the guard. The trains that I witnessed firsthand, Don One, Jester, Is the Wiz, they were coming to the close of their careers. And wow. I witnessed, and back then they didn't buff the flat trains, they didn't buff. So there was Uncle John and Tear Pieces done in 1974, still running intact in 1977. They weren't buffing them. And then it was still a large thing of respect. Like Uncle John and Tia, those guys were legends and they were pretty badass dudes. So you know, they wouldn't think about going over them because Uncle John will hunt you down and find you. You know, that's the kind of thing. Duke Nine, Fane, Is the Wiz. I could drop names all day long, but I won't. But these are the guys that from my era that were important to me. The Top Crew, Mickey and Hearst that started the Top Crew. I saw all their pieces. I remember Dondi when he was writing Naco. I remember when Doro was writing Sono when they first started. They started when I did, which was kind of unique. So when I finally got to catch up with Dondi, we were in Amsterdam for the Coming of the Subway show in 92. And we got to chop it up a little bit. And some guys crossed out one of his throw-ups or his tags out front outside the museum. So he went to step to the kid that did it and they surrounded him. So he ran the museum and the only guy that was standing there was me. Because Quick and Blade were doing negotiations with Hank Pinenberg, who was buying some of their artwork.
Right.
And Donnie's like, "Saw, come here, man. I need you, man. Can you get my back?" I'm like, "Yeah, what's the matter, bro?" And I ran outside and we chased these dudes. When I was Jack, bro. They used to call me Viking. That's my other graffiti name because not because of what I wrote. I used to be Diesel. But anyway, I come running out the door and I was like, me and Donnie chased them up the block and they ran for their lives and we laughed about it. But Dondi is one of those guys that changed the game to me. He took what he learned from the Top Crew about bombing And, you know, to me, there were writers that would throw up writers, bombers. There were writers that burned only, that liked to burn, like Lee and Slade. They really didn't like to do throw-ups. They liked to do whole cars. But there was a certain amount of writers, like Is the Wiz, Dottie, you know, Zephyr. They bombed. They did throw-ups. They did burners. They did insides of the trains with Marcus. They did it all. And there's only a certain amount of writers in my perspective, in my longevity in this game. I've been in this game 46 years from what I've seen. And there was only a certain amount of writers that were all city bombers, all city burners, all city insides guys. They did, you know, it's not, graffiti's multifaceted. You just can't do one part of the game.
No, you can't.
You could. Yeah. You could just be a throw up artist, like In did. He did a couple of pieces, but mostly just bombed. Like, and he's part of history. And it's an important part of history because, like, the Top Crew kind of changed the game from doing five letter piece names. All of a sudden, everybody had a two-letter name. Ike became Iz. Jester became D-Y. Mickey, 729, became 2. Hearst became O-I. So now you had two types of graffiti trying to coexist. Guys that were doing beautiful burners and pieces. And then you had the group of guys that were like, I'm going to get up on every car. Like the cat mentality. The
two
that started by the Top Crew. The Odd Partners, the only crew that's actually in the Hip Hop Hall of Fame, T.O.P. And James Top made sure that they got their recognition in the Hip Hop Hall of Fame. But like the Top Crew, to me, they changed the game. 75 was like, everyone was doing bubble letters, creases. You had the single hits turning into, you know, big tags with outlines, then turned into bubble letters like Comet and T. Cool. And these guys in the Bronx made bubble letters. And then you had simple pieces, like from 75, 76, 77. Mm-hmm. And then, but 75, everyone, even Vinny was an all city king. He had a two letter name, F.I. Stood for fuck it too, you know? And like, some people said it stood for fuck in because he didn't like in changing the game. But in was a Top Crew member that changed the game. The two letter throw ups, they won every car. And then the little panels between the windows were called floaters. Mm-hmm. A two-letter name fits perfect there.
So yeah.
Everyone else could have beautiful pieces on their cars. You could still squeeze in your throw-ups on the floaters. So change the game.
That's very crazy. Cool. The Intel.
Very cool part of history.
Yeah, man, that whole one subject right there, so much intel and a real insight in the depth of your understanding of the game. And like you say, 60 years of study, we'll call it that. You know, you saw the evolution.
Yes.
And you're able to describe that in a very comprehensive timeline. Let's take it back. Let's take it right back. You mentioned 12 years old when you were first studying and got into graph. Italian Brooklyn, would I be right in thinking?
I was born in Brooklyn, but I was raised in Richmond Hill and Ozone Park, Queens.
Ozone Park.
I had to walk to school towards Jamaica Avenue. Mm-hmm. I lived between Atlantic Avenue and Jamaica Avenue, which ran parallel to each other. So I had to walk up Jamaica Avenue to go to school, walking towards the J train. And the J train, the train lines used to interchange when they would pull trains out of the yard. A J train would run on the LL, the M, the B, and the RR lines, and sometimes end up in the D yard or whatever. Mm-hmm. So like, you would see riders from all over Queens and Brooklyn, pretty much. Not really Bronx, but Brooklyn and Queens. Mm-hmm. So an older friend of mine that I knew since I was 5 years old, we used to play football together. You know, when I was five and he was eight, age didn't really matter because we were just throwing a football around. But when he got to be about 12 or 13, you know, it wasn't cool to hang out with a 10-year-old, you know, 9, 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. So he started to do his thing with the graffiti. And he wrote Psych. And on my block, I lived on 109th Street. And on 109th Street, you had Saw, you had Psych, and you had Satch. Three legendary, well, I don't want to call myself a legend, but I'm just a writer. But the three of us on one street, let alone what was going on in my neighborhood.
That's crazy. That's trouble right there.
Right. And Is the Wiz, Vinny, Rock. I can name 100 riders from that neighborhood. And then to go to school, to look at the trains. And then when my friend Psych started writing Psych, I wanted an S name. So, you know, he wrote Psyche, S-I-K-E. So I was in social studies class. I was in the seventh grade, and they were teaching us about the Tsar of Russia and the Tsar of China. So the Tsar of China was T-S-A-R, and the Tsar of Russia was C-Z-A-R. So I came up with S-Z-A-R, because graffiti was about being a king. So Tsar and Tsars were kings. So I wanted to be a king. So I said, I'm going to write S-Z-A-R. So I was pronouncing it Tsar. And guys were calling me Caesar and Cesar. And I said, nah, I dropped the Z. I probably bombed with S-Z-A-R for about maybe 3 months. And then I dropped the Z. And I kind of liked the way S-A-R looked. And then one day I was with a few other writers, and this old time S-O-1 that taught Psych how to write. He was older than all of us. And he was like, Saw, I love that name. That's a real graffiti name. And I was like, all right.
Yeah, that's me right there. That's me forever. I'm gonna keep
that's this me forever. and I would check the train lines, and I ask all the older writers when I hung out with Is the Wiz and Sat, hey, did you ever see a SAR up on any other lines? Nah, man, no. There was one guy that wrote Z-A-R, but not S-A-R. So I was like, ah, I'm good. So it was very important to me to be original and have my own name. You know, some guys will get a name from another writer, which is cool. Like, you pass on the legacy.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
There was a PI-1 who gave the name to PI-2, like Dynamite Pinto. And then you had Fane who wrote PI-2. I like that because it shows you a history and a brotherhood. Hey, I'm passing on my name to you. You keep that name going. And, you know, you want to me, that's what I try to do with the crew. Like TMB, mm-hmm. Iz made me vice president of TMB, and I felt compelled to keep it alive. Like, if you don't bring in new blood, some people are against, oh, well, the books are closed. We don't want to bring in new writers into our crew. Mm. The crew will die. Just like, it's like two people getting married and not have a baby. No baby, the family line dies, right?
Yeah, you gotta for
have
real.
Baby. You gotta have babies. So I bring in, not that they're babies, but I bring in young blood, young talent, some of my homies, and these guys kill shit. And they're dedicated, they're true to the game, mm-hmm. they love the history, and they make me proud, you know. And I'll drop their names because these guys are keeping TMB alive today, like my boy Moes, M-O-E-S, mm-hmm. kills the freights. Zokes, Z-O-K-E-S, mm-hmm. all over the country. He's got 1,000 freights running.
Right.
Spine, Test, like Desk, these guys kill the trains. Gabby, Venta, two females, Gabby and Venta, they bomb. Like, so I feel I owe it to my friend Iz. I promised him that I was going to, you know, I took it serious when he made me the vice president.
Oh, yeah, it would be hard not to, right?
Right? 35 yeah. years ago, he made Satch the warlord, and he made me vice president. So I was like, I took that very seriously, and I still do. And to this day, you know, TMB is alive and well, running all over, you know. Unfortunately, the subways get buffed and because they have the clean train program. The minute a New York City subway train is painted, if they don't photograph it, it goes straight to the buff.
Yeah, I noticed that. There's a couple of Instagrams that do account for certain activities, but it's few and far between, isn't it?
Yeah, but the problem is, you know, we did it. I mean, I was part of the clean train movement. We kept going. Like me, Iz, Satch, Cavs, Ghost, Ven, mm-hmm. Ket, Smith, you know, I could Fuzz. We kept going. I mean, we went on to like 93.
93? That's reasonably late
said the subways were graffiti free. The New York City said that the graffiti trains were graffiti free in 1989. And they said the last train was pulled. One of my trains, it was a Cav Sar Psych was the last graffiti train. I still have the newspaper article. Last graffiti train in Coney Island being taken out to scrap, and they photographed it. It was our train.
Wow. But
we kept going, and you know, we had files on us as far as the Vandal Squad was concerned. Here's a funny story. I'll make it really quick.
Nah, go. Me and my ex
had separated. Me and my first wife had separated. And I was probably like 25, And a couple of my boys said, hey, we're going to come pick you up, take you to the disco tonight, get your mind off your troubles. I said, all right, cool, pick me up. So they came to the house, and my friend Cliff brought this guy with him I never saw before, and my brother was there with this other guy. So I said, yeah, come on in, let's have a drink at the bar. So downstairs in my basement and bar was a shrine to graffiti. I had all these whole cars and shit, blow-ups, all kinds of shit, hanging up canvases. So we started doing drinks at the bar, and the one guy sitting there with his drink like this. And I said to him, what's up? You know, like, you look disturbed. He's like, I'm in the Vandal Squad. I said, you're in the what? He said, I'm in the Vandal Squad. He goes, they got fucking files on you guys. Well, is the Wiz Saw? I go, I'm fucking Saw. He goes, you're Saw? You got files on you like this, man. I'm like, yeah, you were never here, right? And I looked at the guys, and I'm like, you were never here, right? He was like, right. I said, bro, anybody comes knocking on my door, you know, this is young, crazy Saw. This is not 60-year-old Saw. I'm like, anybody comes knocking on my door, I'm coming to your house. Understood? But I come heavy or I don't come. I don't talk shit. I come heavy or I don't come.
You understand?
So he was like, hey, man, I'm off right now. I don't really care what. Well, maybe we should go to the club now and get the fuck out of here, because I don't want you to poison your eyes no more. Because I had a whole shrine, bro, next to my bar.
Oh, my God.
All whole cars, blow up photos. I had a giant canvas that Quick did, Blade, had all this shit hanging up. And he was like, he was in a fucking museum and didn't know it. You know what I mean?
That is incredible. I mean, didn't that trouble your mind on the night out? That must have just been on the back. No?
No, because I knew the face and the name. So, and I knew my boy brought him to my house. I told my boy, he comes to my house, I'm breaking your legs. So,
yeah, exactly. You kind of set precedence, like, don't fuck with this space.
I'm not proud of it. I was more vicious when I was younger. But.
Yeah. Does age come wisdom? Like, is there some things that you probably did? Like,
yeah, with age comes wisdom. You know, with age comes vulnerability and the appreciation of life. And I feel bad for the young kids that don't appreciate it. Like, you know, there's life after 20. Like, don't try to be big just to impress your friends. Take care of yourself first. You know, lay on the sword for some stupidity that you'll be sorry for later on.
You know, but would you have told a young Saw that, and would he have listened?
Good question. I mean, if I respected him, for example, if Is the Wiz would have told me that shit, like, There's a documentary, I don't know if it's still on YouTube, and Iz talks about the first time he met me. I was about 12 or 13 when I met him. And him and Satch were in the layup, and I already knew Satch. And I had wrote with Syke, who used to bomb with Iz. Mm-hmm. So they were in the layup taking photos next to one of their pieces. So I was with this kid, Nova, one of my good friends from childhood who passed away, God rest his soul. I said this to Nova, hey, there's two riders down on the tracks. Let's see where they are. So I jumped down on the tracks and I walk on the catwalk towards them. And they were like, you know, who's this kid, man? He's got fucking balls. He's coming up here. You know? Yeah, I was like 13. So and I walk right over and Satch goes, oh shit, it's Saw. What's up, man? I say, hey, Satch. And I go, if you're Satch, I go, you must be Iz. And they just did it. CI and CT were two throw up names. They did. CT stood for Crazy Todd and CI stood for Crazy Iz. So they did a CI piece. And I was like, you must be Iz the Wiz. He goes, no, I'm CI. And I looked at him and I'm like, CI stands for Crazy Iz. He started laughing. Right? I said, don't bullshit me. He's like, don't bullshit me. I ain't no fucking stupid kid. I know I've been in the game a while. So he started laughing. So he came up. He goes, hey, he started talking to me like a friend. And he's like, yeah, we're starting to bring back an old crew that I was recruited from. It's called the Prisoners of Graffiti, POG. Mm. And he put me in POG that day. And I was like, yeah, I'm so excited about it. I told my friends, Iz the Wiz put me in POG. But I wanted to put me in TMB. But he put me in POG, so I'm happy. You know. But I wanted to be put in TMB. But in his YouTube video, he talks and he's like, you know, Satch wanted to bring him around because he was a, you know, cool kid from the neighborhood. He goes, it's like, Iz was like, I was 17 and he was 12. I was like, I'm not bringing this kid out. God forbid he gets hurt. There's blood on my hands and shit. So we hooked up later on, but we always joked about that because, you know, I didn't think you were up and I was already bombing. So it didn't matter if he took me or not. I was still going to write, you know. I was already corrupted.
I saw excerpts of Pulses Iz the Wiz documentary. He gave me a little sneak preview, and
he's been working on that a long time. He interviewed me for that.
Yeah, bro. I mean, just taking elements of what I've seen, you know, you seem to have been a very important figure in Is the Wiz's life.
Yeah, we were brothers, man. And people don't understand that. Like, TMB was a family. It was family early on with Cisco and Leo and Kaz and Iz. There was a family on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. They were tight. You know, I keep in touch with Cisco to this day, and nice. He respects the fact that I keep TMB alive. And I got his blessings and everything. But Iz put me in it, and, you know, and I'm going to perpetuate that and push that to the end, till the wheels fall off. But like you said, we were family. Like, you know, Iz and me used to go to Yankee games. We worked together, you know. We worked together at the airport. You know, I have pictures of him holding my son when he was born. Like, you know, my sons used to call him Uncle Mike. My two boys, Lewis and Vincent, used to call him Uncle Mike. They still have, when Lewis was born, Iz and Satch bought a train set, a freight train set for under the Christmas tree. Wow. And they all did it. They all did a Lewis on one side for his name. And the other side, he has Iz the Wiz, Satch, Mickey from Amsterdam did one. I think Quick did one. I think Blade did one. And they have his name on one side. And I tell my son, he's 31 now. You know, he's 31 now.
Wow.
I said, this train set, I said, you got to take care of that train set, because it's, you know, it's museum worthy at this point.
It really is, yeah.
Everyone's old. Satch's got nothing to do with graffiti no more. Iz passed away. I said, you got to, you know, treasure that. He goes, I do that. I got it all wrapped up. And, you know, I take it out once in a while, and it all works and shit. But Satch and Iz put that to my house when.
That's sick. About the international value of TMB. I mean, we've already mentioned Pulse, but there, you know, there's also ATTEC in Germany. There's Mickey in Amsterdam.
ATTEC, when I first saw ATTEC TMB on Instagram, I said, "What's up? We'll put you in TMB." He's like, "It's Sula." I'm like, "Okay, now I know." Because he painted it at the Fun Factory. Like, guys change up their names because of obvious reasons. Because, you know, every time he does a Sula piece, they come knocking on his door. So you got to change it up.
Yeah,
which
real
I get. You know what I'm saying? I get that shit. My dog's barking because he heard me knock on the desk here. It's all right, boy. Take it easy, killer.
You know what I'm saying? In the dog cool killer.
Woo. Yeah. He's named after El Chapo.
Yo, I love it. In my nostalgic, I guess, mind of where I think it probably went back in the day, and the way New York was, I could imagine it got to a real high pitch pressure where you had to get out. Is that the reason? Is that the reason for Arizona? You moved out to Arizona?
No. My second wife is from Arizona originally, so we used to come out here on vacation and stuff, and then she's like, you know, I like to move out here and catch up with my family. Her father got sick, and then we decided to move out here. And when he passed, and I always saw myself, most East Coasters from the United States, when they get older, you know, to get out of the city and the cold, they go to Florida. You know, a lot of my boys are in Florida. Like Sago, RTW, TMB, Sago's in Florida. A lot of people in Florida now. So that's why I always saw myself going. But Arizona, it's like, I'm originally, my family's from Sicily. So I've been to Sicily a few times, and Arizona is the same climate as Sicily. Terracotta roofs, sun, just no ocean. You know, you got pools and you got lakes, but it's got a nice vibe. But let me tell you about that, how this is a great story. So I move out to Arizona. I'm out of the game a little bit. Now, I've been in and out of the game my whole life. So I come back into the game, and I'm not in the game at all. I move out to Arizona. And I get a phone call, and it's my boy Quick. And Quick says, "Yo, they're opening up a hip hop shop downtown Phoenix, bro. And they're flying me in to do the opening. You got to come by and see me." I says, "When?" He says, "Tomorrow night." I says, "I'm going to go see this comedian, Sebastian Maniscalco, tomorrow night, man. I got tickets, man. I ain't going to see you, though, man." She's like, "Oh, man, you got to come see me, bro." So I tell my wife, I said, "Listen, we're going to stop over here and see Quick. I got to see him. He's my boy. I haven't seen him in a while. He's going to be here in Arizona. I want to catch up with him." She's like, "Okay." So I walk in, there's a line. There's like 50 guys there with their black books. And he's signing black books. I ain't waiting on this line. So I walk in the front of the line, I kick his chair. I said, "What's up, motherfucker?" He starts screaming. I can't believe it's me. Jumps on me. He's hanging off my neck and shit like this. So the owner of the place, he's a bouncer in real life. Like he looks like a linebacker for for the Jets and shit. He's like 6'6", 300 pounds, and he owns the place. So he comes running over. You know, he promotes hip hop. He's a legendary figure out here.
Gotcha.
His name is Chuck House. I give him a shout out. He promotes hip hop here for 20 years. He's been bringing all the acts from all over the world here to Phoenix.
Is that that Trill spot? Is it?
Trill.
Yeah. I've heard of it. I know it.
So this is the grand opening of Trill. So Crick is there as the centerpiece, and I show up. And so Crick is screaming, and he comes running over. He's like, "Is everything all right?" And Crick is like, "This is fucking Saw. It's my boy, man. We bomb trains together. He lives here." And Chuck's like, "What? You live in Phoenix?" He says, "Yeah." He's like, "Don't go nowhere. Give me a number." And 2 weeks later, he had me in there for a show. All the local writers were like, "Saw, we got a wall. Saw, we got this. Saw, come paint. Come in."
You know, kicks off your obsession again, right?
Just when I thought it was out, they put me right back in. And then shortly after that, I did a few things. I did a show and stuff, and then I got sick. And nice sunny day, I'm driving my car, I put a cigar in my mouth, hit something in the back of my throat. I go like this. It's the size of a fucking golf. So call my wife, we go to urgent care. Urgent care sent me right to the hospital. And then the doctor's like, You got cancer. You gotta go see a specialist in the morning. So I went to see the specialist, and COVID had just started, and my wife couldn't come in. I go in there, and the doctor's like, "We're gonna do everything we can." I says, "What do you mean?" He says, "We're gonna do everything we can. You got inoperable throat cancer. It's on its way to your brain. It's in your throat, in your tonsils, upside of your face." I said, "Well, just cut it. Just cut it out. So we have to move half your face." He says, "Can't cut it out." I said, "Okay, let's get this thing started. When we start treatment?" And this was Friday. He started my treatment Tuesday. And I had to do, I was always a pretty big guy. I was 240 pounds. I went down 160 pounds, lost 80 pounds.
Wow. And
the only reason why I survived is because of my size. Because they, to fight what I had, they had to give me what they would give somebody with stage 4 cancer. I only had stage 1, but it was an advanced radical form of cancer that they couldn't operate on. So long story short, I beat it only because of this, because I kept saying, I got to be farsighted. Yeah. I booked a trip to Miami, rented a hotel on the beach. And every day I would tell my wife, come in, and it's like, "How you feeling today?" I was like, fucking emaciated and shit. And I was like, "I'm thinking about that beach, and I'm going to go see Gloria Estefan's restaurant on the beach. And I'm gonna hang out and party on the beach when I'm done with this shit." And you have to be farsighted because, your mind is a powerful organ. People don't realize how powerful your mind is. And I was like, "I'm not going nowhere." And you get religious real quick. And I would pray every day and say, "Listen, I got shit to do. I'm not ready to go yet. I got shit to do. I got kids that aren't settled. I got things I got to do. I got a father that's sick. I got to take care of. I got shit to do." And by the grace of God, I pulled through it, and I went, like I said, went from 240 pounds to 160 pounds. I looked like death. My eyelashes fell out, my hair. I had to do 28 radiation treatments. 20 could kill you. I still have a lot of bad. I have no saliva glands on the right side of my mouth. I have difficulty swallowing. I have thick phlegm like putty in my throat. It chokes me up, but I work out every day. I'm fucking strong as a bull. I fight it, and I'm cancer-free right now, 4 years. So,
congratulations, brother. That is an incredible story. I mean,
got lucky.
Yeah, you got lucky, man. Yeah.
Very lucky. And now, then, as soon as I got my last treatment and shit, I was feeling a little bit better. I'm still frail. Mm. And my boy Zoke says, we were hanging out, and he said, "Come on, let's go paint a fucking train." And I was like, "I haven't paid a train in a while, man." He's like, "Okay, let's go. You need to go. Man, I got to get one in with you." He was worried about me dying and shit. So I was like, "All right, let's go." So I went and painted one, and it was like, I didn't need the medicine that I was on. It was like medicine. I came home that night. I was pumped looking at the pictures. Wow, it was an ugly piece too, but I didn't care. I was rusty. And then, shit, I probably have over close to at least 200, if not more, running right now across the country, all over the place. I mean, I went on a mission. It's what we do. And once you get the fever, age is a number.
Yeah, for sure. Especially in graft. Did you attribute that youthful energy of graft as almost like a repurpose for your recovery?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was medicine. It keeps your mind occupied, not thinking about being sick. It keeps your energy levels. You know, if you think about someone that was a full-blown rider, it consumes your life. It becomes everything. It's the appropriating of the paint, getting the caps, sketching designs, sketching outlines of what you want to do, getting the guys together, you know, putting together a theme to the car that you're going to paint, going to the yards. Oh, this yard is empty tonight. This yard is packed. This yard's got surveillance or security or whatever. And it consumes you, and it becomes part of who I am, if I like it or not. You know, like I go out to a restaurant with my wife somewhere, and somebody comes over and it's like, Saw, what's up? You know, they don't call me Charlie. They call me Saw, you know, because that's who they know me as. It's part of who I am. So yeah. If I like it or not, you know, now that we're getting a little recognition, you know, it's like, you're not famous, but you're infamous.
Yeah. You know? I feel that.
And I feel like, I also feel like it's very important to me because it was a big part of my life. And, you know, even if I climb Mount Rushmore, I'm going to be remembered for being Saw, you know, and that's okay. I'm okay with that because that was, you know, I'm not painting to be famous anymore. Mm. I paint because I love it, you know, and this opportunity has come along. I've been in shows and I've been included in the coveted Art Curiel in Paris, amongst everybody from Banksy to Scene to Quick to Blade to Crash to Days Futura. You know, I'm among them. And I don't consider myself a king, but I just made a mark. I think I made a fucking dent. You know, I didn't just make a mark. I made a dent, and I'm part of history. If you like it or not. I don't care if you don't like my work or you don't like my work or you love it. I think I motivate a lot of older guys. Say, hey, man, Saw's doing it. I can go out and get one in. Why not?
Well, that's what legendary status is about, man. That's what legendary status is about, and that's what people respond to. I say this all the time. It's like, find your okay sign. You know, it's okay for you to do it. Like, Saw's doing it. You keep going. You know what I mean? Saw keeps on going. Like, you want peers. You want people that inspire you that way, don't you?
Yeah. The younger guys that I'm with, they're like, I can't believe, like, my buddy Zokes was just in another state. He went to Colorado. He was hanging with a bunch of riders from his era. And they're like, how'd you hook up with Saw, man? He's like, yeah, he just showed up in Phoenix, man. And, like, we hooked up. And Zokes worked at Trill at the time. He was the paint guy. So he was like, any colors I want, I just call him on the phone. Yo, I need some greens. I need some turquoises. I need some purples. I got you, bro. And he packed my shit up. As soon as the delivery came in, I'd have my shit on the side. So I had my colors, you know, and stuff like that. And then, you know, he's a local legend out here. He had 20 years under his belt. He wasn't a kid, you know. So when me and him hooked up, we got busy and we did a lot of work. And, you know, it's nice to see, like, there's another legend out here, Caper. God rest his soul. He passed away 2 years ago. When I hooked up with Caper, we got to do some freights. He did tons of freights out here. And he's a local legend here, and they do memorials for him and everything. But he was like, man, got mad at Zokes because him and Zokes were boys. He's like, you and Saw did fucking freights. You didn't call me, bro. I'm the fucking legend out here. I'm the OG. You got to let me down, man. I want to hook up. So I was proud to say we got a few trains in before he got sick and passed.
That's amazing. Hey, look,
that's a nice thing. Like, everyone has their OGs. You know, Arizona has their OGs. England, you know, United Kingdom, France. Everyone has their OGs. You know, and their own history.
It's true, but one thing that you guys do have is freights. Like, we don't have half as much of a freight culture. Well, we do have a freight culture. I'm not gonna, you know, I ain't gonna put too much shade on UK freights, but Arizona, like America as a whole. I mean, freights is its own. That's a whole nother beast, right?
What I like about the freights is they go all over the country. It's just like. There's a bunch of freights I never saw again. But then, you know, when you think, maybe somebody just went over them or whatever, all of a sudden, boom, picture will come in my inbox, power the internet. Not like years ago, you had to go out there and bench them yourself. There's so many guys out there trying to document the culture and benching it. I love those dudes because they make my day. They make my day every day because they collect photos of trains like we used to collect baseball cards. You know what I mean?
Yeah, real talk. It's true. They're out there, man. They're benching for us.
Yeah. Love the benches, man. They make it. They document the history and they keep it going.
So you're telling me that, like, if, like, what, a year and a half down the line where you think, oh, that's way gone, that someone's gone over that or whatever, you'll see the photos show up?
You never know if the freight gets, like, the freights also go into Canada and Mexico. And sometimes they put them on a ship, a boat, may lay in a yard before it might be full of scrap metal and they didn't get to it. So that train will just sit there for a while. You don't know what the contents are. So that's another thing. So, you know, if it's something that's just hauling wheat back and forth from New York to California, that train's going to keep running back and forth. And yet, you know, I have some pieces that were benched 20 times and I have some pieces I never saw again. So, but it's all good. You know, as long as that, you know I'm still rolling, even if it's only one left, I'm still rolling, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You're going to roll.
It's not a wall.
It's not a wall. A wall just stays there, you know. A train's rolling somewhere. You know, someone's seeing it, if they like it or not, but it's rolling. That's
it's like the definition of Back to the Future, because it suddenly comes back like years later. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's so cool.
And the best bit is the Master Blasters keep on rolling. That's the main thing, right?
Well, my goal is when I finally do my last piece, and I tell my guys when I go, I never know when my last piece is going to be. This might be it. No, you know, I don't know how my health is going to be. I don't know what life brings. Nobody does. Can't predict the future. So, like, and when we go out, I say, let's make it a good one because this might be my last one. And then motivate them to burn, you know what I mean? And then, you know, hey, 2 days later, hey, let's go again. Hey, I'm not done yet. Let's get another one in. Whatever. And then they go on their own too, which is great. And then they team up with other riders. So keeps it going. And hopefully I'll leave TMB in the hands of my guys to keep it rolling and keep this going. I am planning a 50th anniversary of TMB.
Woo! Nice.
And next year will be the 50th year that TMB.
Damn.
So I'm going to try and do it. I have a venue I'm working on, and then I'm going to see, what the funds are like, what kind of support we can get to get some of my original guys out here that are left. Like, it's important that I have Cisco out here and I get Satch out here and Quick and maybe Sago and Cavs, you know, some of my original boys and some of the boys that bombed with us, like Ghost, you know, it'd be important for me to have all of them there for this venue. But yeah. I'm looking to do something epic involving an art gallery and then, you know, meet and greets and music and food and that kind of thing. And just have I want it to be a party as well, but I want people that show up get to see history, whether it's blow-ups or photographs of old trains from the 70s and things of that nature. But I'm in the process of doing that now. I already have a venue. I have a sponsor. I have one place in mind that's actually a nightclub plus an art gallery right across from each other.
Wow.
That's what I'm working on right now. So,
that sounds incredible, man. I definitely got to come down and check that out. That sounds sick.
It's going to be epic. If I'm going to do it, it's going to be top shelf. Otherwise, I don't do nothing half-assed.
No, no, no.
If I do something, I do it 100%, or I don't do it at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. And like you say, drive it like you stole it. You never know if it's going to be your last on anything. It's just, that's life. Keep it moving.
Yeah, let's be a comet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that. Well, you've already said to me that this won't be the last podcast, obviously, and I really, really appreciate your time, Sar. It's been an absolute journey. Absolutely. It's crazy. And I feel like we haven't even touched the surface, so we really must do this again, my brother.
Listen, just reach out to me. I got you. I promise. I feel bad about the technical difficulties we had, but we'll get it. We'll get it right next time for sure.
Hey, listen, the people are going to be well and truly happy that this happened. And again, brother, thank you so much for joining us.
Let's get something going in London again. We got to get Steam out of retirement. Get him, put a venue together. Get us all these old timers back together. It would be great.
Sounds like a plan, my brother. Sounds like a plan. We get VOP. We get ILC. We get TMB. It'll be one hell of a collaboration.
Yeah,
right?
in living color. Get Pulse and get some guys together too. That would be great.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Stockwell is not ready. Yo, Killer Keller podcast out like it was out of fashion. Sar TMB, what more do you need in your life? Yeah, you need another 500 podcasts that we've got in stock, so go check them out. This is part of a bigger timeline. The tapestry keeps on going. As for TMB, as you know, 50th anniversary on the way, so watch out for that. Killer Keller podcast out like it was out of fashion. Remember, crime don't pay, but neither did aid. Stay lucky and don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. Easy.